International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. A few weeks ago, we presented a documentary, Citizen Journalism, Chaos or Democracy. Today, we present Program 2. It's presented by Michael Burke. He visits Cairo and experiences firsthand how citizen journalists and bloggers have taken on the Egyptian government.
تيت راديو بنقول اللي في نفسنا تيت راديو وما فيش تيت في الدنيا تقدر تمنعنا تيت راديو خد لك جنب خد لك جنب خد لك جنب
They don't know that you can be dangerous just by expressing yourself. Politics in Egypt means that you're talking about the president. But if you start talking about any other thing, like education, like health, which is also politics, they just don't notice you and they don't stop you because they don't think that this is politics. So if you are smart enough, you have enough freedom of speech.
Ibrahim El-Gahi runs Teach Radio, the number one online station in Egypt, indeed the Arab world. Teach, the noise made when something's censored out. He treads a fine line in a country where bloggers are watched and hounded by a regime determined to keep a tight grip on power. Where one blogger got 3 years jail for insulting President Mubarak, Egypt's ruler for nearly 30 years. Ibrahim El-Gahi survives by not taking the government head-on, by criticising obliquely with satire and metaphor. While Abbas is much more direct. His website, Egypt Awareness, deals in security force abuses, police involvement in harassment, ill-treatment and torture.
If you go down the street now and ask anybody who's walking, did you hear about torture in the police station? Did you see the video clip of Ahmed Al-Kabir being sodomized? Did you hear about sexual harassment in downtown? Did you hear about so-and-so? He will tell you yes. And it all started on the internet. Actually, some of the material that we published on the internet are being like swapped on people's mobile phones. And like we have like 40 million people who have mobile phones at the moment.
10 million or so of the 80 million people who live in Egypt have access to the internet, and it would be a mistake to think more than a minority of them are that interested in politics. As elsewhere in the world, most people find social matters, gossip even, much more fascinating. Khad Alal created a sensation with her blog called I Want to Get Married, about the trials of a young woman whose parents keep coming up with unpromising-looking potential husbands.
Anyone with a heartbeat would be the perfect groom. So I faced a lot of problems. And they were always saying that he's perfect. I mean, he's a man and he has an apartment. What else do you need? I mean, and I was starting to believe them. And I really started to believe that I'm, you know, maybe I'm the crazy one. So I started my blog to ask people about their opinion.
Her blog's been turned into a best-selling book that sells across half the world and is now a television sitcom. Success all round, except for the fact that she's still unmarried and, judging by the way she describes her suitors, likely to remain so.
I described his physical appearance and what was he wearing. I said that, you know, his teeth must, you know, love each other very much because they were like crowded in his mouth, and his ears is like, you know, they must be not talking. There's a big problem because one the east, one the west, you know. I said, stick out. Yeah.
Khad Alal's entertaining swipe at the marriage matrons of the Middle East illustrates how vibrant and relatively sophisticated Egypt can be in a region not particularly noted for either quality. Egypt's rulers claim it has a free and vigorous press. They point to some 700 newspapers, including those who support opposition politicians. But while Abbas says that's nonsense.
We're not living in real democracy, and the newspapers are not telling everything, and it's some kind of a charade. We have independent and opposition newspapers, and they claim that we have freedom of expression, but there are topics that they never discuss, issues that they never tackle. So I didn't believe that there was real freedom here.
What sort of things were even opposition newspapers not reporting?
Well, it was a taboo subject to discuss the president and his family and his son, and what role does his wife play and how he's running the country, and is there going to be another president, and who's going to follow him, and will there be competition in the presidential elections. So such topics were never discussed before. Anybody who would dare to do that will go directly to jail for insulting the president.
While Abbas has certainly embarrassed the government by, for instance, publishing pictures on his website of thugs protected by police, sexually harassing women journalists at a demonstration, he's constantly targeted by the security forces, cat and mouse.
It was like a game that you are playing with them, and you should accept that you sometimes win, sometimes you lose. If you think of it otherwise, you will get scared and you will not do what you're doing.
Have they taken any steps against you in any way?
Yeah, well, actually, I've been jobless now for 2.5 years. I guess I'm like blacklisted in all the media that is working in Egypt, including foreign media, unfortunately. And there are campaigns to tarnish my reputation. There are like spreading rumors that I work for them, or like that I get funding from the United States, or like that I converted to Christianity.
You haven't been actually locked up. You haven't been beaten up.
I have been tortured. I have been locked up, but not for more than a day. It's mostly for like 12 hours, like 18 hours, stuff like that.
So what's the future for you now?
It's not going to work for me here in Egypt unless I go abroad. But I'm not ready to do that now. This is actually what they want here in Egypt. They want me to leave the country, and I don't want to fulfill this dream for them.
It's a fine line for the government, too. As America's chief ally in the Middle East, heavily reliant on American aid, it doesn't want to be seen to be too repressive. Mahdi al-Dakhokh is editor of a government magazine and sits on the ruling party's media committee, chaired by President Mubarak's son.
Freedom has no barriers. I'm all for criticism when it's part of a debate, but not when it's accusation unsupported by evidence. There is a minister who has been accused of taking a bribe of $70 million to not through a business deal, and a colleague who has been accused of homosexuality. And you know how sensitive such things can be in the Arab world. The accusers did not have a shred of proof. That's why the law needs to set boundaries and red lines which must not be crossed.
But the government has more weapons to deploy against its critics in the old, and increasingly the new, media than red paint with which to draw lines. Hassam El-Hamalawi is a left-wing journalist who's worked for American newspapers as well as papers and websites in Egypt.
The government doesn't use the old tactics of like going in by itself after the journalist. Now you will find mysteriously some Egyptian patriots who read some independent publication and got so upset about an article that was written about the president. So he would file a lawsuit in court accusing that paper of defaming our president, of hurting our national security, of defaming Egypt's image abroad and other sorts of like bogus fabrications. And the court would rule on behalf of this patriot.
And if a journalist crosses the other red lines, what could be the consequences of that?
It could be like what Abdel Halim Kandil, the veteran Egyptian journalist, faced in 2004 when he got kidnapped by plainclothes thugs, beaten up and left almost naked at the hill, Al-Muqattama Hill in the desert. We say they would also fight the bread you eat, meaning they will go after your job. Many journalists here, especially those who work for the foreign press, are not allowed the local press syndicate membership. We have to get credentials from the so-called government press center. So I've been denied credentials 3 times from them. I'm not allowed to cover any government events.
Radio. لغتنا الجميلة. جميلة فعلا.
The biggest difference is that the citizen journalism is closer to the citizen, while the other medias are closer to their own idea of agenda. Well, they think that 15 people killed in Iraq is the main story, and 8 people killed in Pakistan is the second main story. And if one man is killed in Egypt, it's going to be the third story, or maybe not broadcasted, but maybe the son of this dead man would have something else to say, and it will be his main story.
Ibrahim El-Gahi of Teat Radio on why, in his view, citizen journalism is closer to its audience than the traditional media could ever be. That, in a sense, is everything that's right and wrong about it. Is it journalism at all? There's very little dispassionate objectivity, not very much investigation of the facts. Listen to Ibrahim El-Gahi again, this time on his theory of internal journalism.
If you are a true journalist, you should go out on the street and ask people and get opinions. But if you are a citizen journalism, you just go inside yourself and ask yourself about how you feel. I don't think that I am a side as a media and people are another side where I should go across the street to talk to them. Actually, I am them. So I talk to myself, I talk about myself, I talk to my friends, and this is like our internal journalism theory.
For the most part, the political blogosphere in Egypt is confined to a young, educated, well-off, metropolitan minority. Ahmed Abu Al-Fattah is all those things, but is quite different. He blogs for the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamist party that says it wants a civil state with a religious reference, and represents the biggest threat to the Egyptian regime. In his interview with me, Michael Burke, for BBC World Service, he's chillingly clear on the limitations of the internet as an agent of change.
The internet is not Egypt, because Egypt, to change, I think we need to change with blood.
Let's be honest ourselves. The internet is not going to change anything. Change in Egypt won't come by keyboards and laptops. It's only going to come by blood. That means people taking to the streets and even losing their lives for the sake of change. Internet is a tool for people to communicate, but when change comes, it won't be virtually through cyberspace. It will happen on the streets. I suspect the regime here has spotted this. Okay, young people spend all night on their blogs, let off steam, accuse the government, vent their outrage. Then the next day, off they go to work, feeling they've achieved something, but they haven't. I think this is why the authorities continue to allow access to the internet. They see it as a safety valve.
The government may well believe that. Gerhard Uda is professor of political science at Cairo University and sits on the ruling party's key policy committee.
The government was rather stunned because of the, you know, it's a new thing, attacking the system or something like that. But you have to understand something about the Egyptian political system, its ability to include them, to organize them, to team them, to talk with them, to open doors with them. 3 years ago, the pattern was stiff, tough, fierce. Now, still there's criticism, but it's more of understanding. If you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem, then the state must be part of the solution of this. Then it should get involved in this. And in order to get involved in this, then becomes should train itself to interact with all these groups. I think it's successful.
The regime doesn't just try to embrace and co-opt its internet critics. It has its own bloggers, flooding the net with pro-government weblogs. In her own less confrontational way, Khad Abd al-Alal, the blogger still wanting to get married, reckons she's achieved social change in a way those pursuing political change have not.
Blogging gave us a lot of freedom and, you know, now sky's the limit. I mean, after my blog, there was a lot of other blogs, there is a woman going through a bad divorce and she's writing about it in a blog. Homosexuals are making their own blogs and atheists are making their own blogs. No one can talk about all of these subjects before blogging.
There are those who think and hope the internet may also be a force for religious freedom. Shadi Samir is a Baha'i blogger, a member of a small community in Egypt that follow a religion not recognised by what is predominantly a Muslim state.
That kind of status quo that we have in Egypt about religion is being interrupted now by ideas that people dare not think about before. There is some ideas that are starting to gain acceptance on the internet. I mean, if you follow the blogosphere, you would find that there are some ideas like the freedom of choosing one's religion, the freedom of changing your religion, facts about Islam, facts about Christianity, the truth about the Baha'i faith. All these things are being exposed because of blogging. There's no control now over the media. It's out there and everyone can see it. And if people can see it, then they will talk about it. And even if they have negative input about it, there's also a positive impact, and this creates things to start moving.
It can create discourse, it can get people talking about it, but is it going to change anything?
It will, because this is the voice of the people. No one ever stopped people from getting what they want, even if it takes a long time.
What political change there is happening largely out of sight, often out of town, and the internet is playing a part. Egypt's workers are beginning to flex their muscles. For the first time, they're striking for better wages and conditions. According to Hassam El Hamalawi, the left-wing blogger, the internet both encourages and protects them.
Workers used to go up in uproar, like whenever they would hear about some tiny trade union in Norway, you know, I mean, heard of their strike and they are inspired by it. And, you know, they have sent out a solidarity message. Now, these things for a striking worker in the middle of nowhere in the Nile Delta town, when he or she knows that there are people in other continents who are with him or with her in this strike, this played a central role in raising the morale.
So in what way is all this changing the industrial and, more importantly, the political landscape of Egypt?
The government knows today that it cannot get away with whatever it was doing before that easily. In the 1990s, an entire village could have been wiped out during our dirty war with the Islamists, and you would have never heard anything about it. People would disappear, and you would have never heard anything about it. Right now, if they touch me, I would go and go online, and I would photograph myself. I would show, you know, I mean, the torture photos. I would write in English and in Arabic. I would mobilize, you know, I mean, the rights watchdogs in order to intervene on my behalf. This is a classic third world dictatorship. But even third world dictatorships, they have to be responsive, you know, I mean, sometimes. And I think we've managed to win a room for maneuver thanks to the internet.
Hassam El Hamalawi believes in the old slogan, "Workers of the world unite." That's the way to achieve change, he thinks, not expecting Western governments will ever do it for them.
We are against any sort of foreign intervention by governments. But we welcome the intervention of civil society and non-governmental actors. Meaning, I don't want Gordon Brown or Obama to come up tomorrow and tell me we're democratizing Egypt or like we're doing this or we're doing that. Because I know at the end of the day they are hypocrites and liars, and that Mubarak could not have continued in power without the backing of 10 Downing Street and the White House. But what I would love to see, British labor unions extending their solidarity to the striking workers here in Egypt. What I would like to see are human rights activists in America who are not affiliated with the U.S. State Department or the U.S. government extending their solidarity to torture victims here in Egypt.
There's a paradox here. The internet is still largely confined to the Egyptian middle class, yet it's only by using it to stir up and organize the workers that Hassam El Hamalawi thinks the revolutionary change he wants can be achieved.
I know that if they really regarded the judges as a problem, they would close down all the courts, you know, I mean, for like 5 years and use military tribunals instead. If the students cause problems to the regime, they would close down the universities. But if the workers are not happy with the Egyptian state cannot close down the factories, cannot close down the workplaces. We've managed to get our first independent trade union in the history of the country in 51 years. It was just declared last December by the tax collectors. Our tax collectors had gone on strike, you know, during which tax collection dropped by 90%. And they launched the first independent trade union in the history of the country. All of these things, you know, I mean, give me hope.
صباح الخير. أنا إبراهيم من teatradio.com.
Over on Teat Radio, their ambitions are gentler and more long-term. The kind of change that Ibrahim El-Gahi wants to see will come about by teaching people, not leading them to the barricades.
If I teach a young man to plant a tree, it's politically dangerous. If I teach him how to feed his family, depending on himself without getting a government job, isn't it dangerous? If I teach somebody to read and write, isn't it politically dangerous? And this is what we're doing. We prefer education rather than revolution. If you think about what we're doing as a seed for a coming monstrous tree, it's going to happen because this is how things start.
And here in Egypt, what capacity has it to affect change?
Now it's a bit minimal. 10 years from now, we're going to have a different generation that internet is like opening a tap for water.
If you're part of it, Egypt's political blogosphere is an exciting place to be, experimenting with ideas, pushing boundaries, challenging the monolithic system. The Baha'i blogger Shadi Samir.
I have a feeling that we're living in a boiling society. We reached some kind of a boiling point where there are too many ideas and too many thoughts and too many directions that people are bouncing between. This is useful as long as it does not reach the point of eruption into something that we wouldn't like for our country.
Boiling point doesn't sound very comfortable.
It does if it's boiling with the juicy things that you would like.
But Professor Gerhard Uder, with a veteran's eye for political realities and a prime seat in the councils of the ruling party, takes a more cynical, some might say realistic, view of the blogosphere. President Mubarak, he told BBC World Service, has nothing on the internet to worry about.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Why be very, very upset because of the internet? Small culture, young culture, if my followers cannot react to them, then the problem of the followers. Then put it realistically, man.
Citizen Journalism, Part 2, Democracy or Chaos, was produced and presented by Michael Burke.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Corey 105, it is PD222 Journal.
PD220, Corey 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Before we end off, I just want to remind you about the Patreon page for The Happy Station Show and PCJ Radio International. We have been uploading a number of other programs not connected with Happy Station, but from the Radio Netherlands archives, including some. Well, some of you may remember a time when one of the largest manufacturers of shortwave radios was actually Sony. In the 1970s, if you'd bought certain models of certain shortwave receivers in Japan, they would also include a 7-inch single. Now, people may remember the little sheets of paper inside some of the boxes of shortwave radios with frequencies and times. Very often, these were out of date by the time you actually got the radio. But Sony actually had a very ingenious idea, and that was to include a 7-inch single that included the identification signals for some of the stations.
Deutsche Welle, 西ドイツケルン. BBC イギリス・ロンドン。
And that, of course, was an excerpt of one of those Sony singles that was given out as a gift with shortwave receivers, so you can actually figure out what stations you're listening to by the interval signal. We started making them available through our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/PCJRadio. Go and help us out, make a small donation, and you too will be able to access all this content. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week. If you wish to get in touch with us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. 73 and 88 to the ladies.